Can I just ask you to start off with what your first reaction was when you heard the news of the pandemic?
When the pandemic came across, when we kind of found out about it on the news, and it was from a very small number of people, and it started increasing. As a school, it became quite frightening, I suppose. And obviously, being a leader in a school, you have to make sure people don't see that you are worried about it in a way. Mm-hmm. So my first reaction was to look at what we were doing and consider whether we should continue doing some of the things we did even early on when it first came out, because there was some schools reacted straight away and they closed everything straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Some schools took more a measured approach and looked away to direction from the local authority.
Right, so suddenly your professional mind went into overdrive, did it, about how it would affect the school immediately?
Yeah, it did, because you, obviously at that point we started seeing what was going on in China particularly, and we could see, I've got friends in China, in schools in China, so I was aware that they were potentially going to online learning and things like that. So mm-hmm. we fortunately had already started developing our online learning provision, and we started looking at it from a point of view of, obviously child safety comes first, always does, but we also looked at upon what potential damage this could do for children's education and learning generally. And so we had to consider how we could ensure we kept children engaged into their learning journeys.
Did this incur lots of extra work?
Yes. Yes.
Getting the staff ready and...
Yes. It did. It did, in a sense, it did incur lots more work, but fortunately we'd already started some of that work anyway. So we were in a fortunate position, because what we had planned to do was that we were already had decided that we knew about what Google had started developing. So we had already started developing our homework using it through technology and sharing parents. So parents could see it. And the old excuse, I'm sure you never did this when you were at school, but the old excuse that the dog has eaten the homework couldn't happen any longer. So we decided we did that. So we already moved that direction anyway. But it did incur more work, because you had to prepare things in a different way.
Right.
And so from doing things on paper, you started doing everything online.
Right.
And you had to look at how you had to make sure teachers and teaching assistants were trained to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask that about, did many of them have to be retrained or have further training?
Again, we were lucky. We had done a lot of training before it happened.
Right.
So then we had that. And then what we did do is, as a school, we were very lucky. We had some of the staff are innovators. Mm. I believe education should be a creative thing.
Yeah.
And it should be an innovative thing. I think today's society, the world, well, the way the world is now, even before COVID and even more now because of COVID and because of other things, people have to be able to adapt and be creative and flexible in terms of how to learn, because most of us are not going to be doing the same jobs now. Children now, the chances are they're going to be doing three or four different professions.
Mm-hmm.
So we were fortunate. We had some teachers who were quite innovative, and as a result of them being innovative, we started training ourselves.
Wow.
So we were lucky that teachers, the way the environment was of the staff we had, we were very much a very collective as a group, as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we kind of trained each other. So one of the areas we developed quite significantly was something called an interactive classroom. And what an interactive classroom basically is click and see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a screen, and children could click on things, could see videos, could see teachers' live lessons, and you could see it all in one classroom. So it's like being the best you could possibly get without actually being in the classroom itself. And we did that. And we were lucky because teachers trained each other,
mm-hmm.
and teaching assistants trained each other. So it was quite good. But it was a lot of work to start off with, in the sense of getting things set up, things like risk assessments, looking at how you, because as a leader of a school, your responsibilities is probably a lot more significant than people realise, because you're not just looking after your 200 and whatever, 210 children in our case. You're also looking after 20, 30 staff. So you're trying to manage their well-being and making sure they're safe. And you're also managing your whole wider community, because whatever we do here, we need to make sure it's safe elsewhere as well. And that's really important. So it took a long time to consider what was best for our children, to make sure the children were safe, parents are safe, and staff are safe.
What about resources? Did you find that you needed extra resources?
Yes. So the most difficult thing during this whole pandemic would be, in the last 2 years, would be the, I suppose it was only a problem because science, like all things, evolves, and we learnt more as time went on what we could do, what we couldn't do, in terms of which was safe and what weren't safe. Yeah. So initially, the whole idea of contact, distance, all was an absolute nightmare. So everything was quite extreme.
Yeah.
Now looking back on it, it was quite extreme how we had to deal with it. Yeah. So because of that, it was very clear that we needed a lot more resources in order to be able to facilitate that. So we for example, we suddenly ordered gallons and gallons of cleaning materials. We suddenly ordered tons and tons of masks and gloves and boxes and all kinds of stuff like that, which we as a head, you never imagine I'd be doing that. But no. I was doing that. I was ordering. So I was doing jobs which normally you would expect to do as a head teacher.
Yeah.
I was doing it because I wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, children were safe, and if we could, provide an education for them as well in school when possible.
Did you find it difficult to get these resources?
Yes. There was a time, like all of us, when, the key, although we didn't use them at school, but paracetamol, there was almost a national crisis of paracetamol because people didn't want to use ibuprofen and then paracetamol instead. Mm-hmm. In the same way, some materials which you needed in school were very hard to come hold by. Mm. Simple things, like sometimes there's some cleaning products which were very difficult to get hold of to start off with. Even masks to a certain extent were quite challenging to start off with, to get hold of. So that was difficult, but what it did was it was also engaging. So that was hard work. It was actually quite engaging, and I think the way some heads are and the way I am as a person, I actually quite enjoyed the challenge of it, because in the end of the day, my passion's children. Mm-hmm. Always been children, doing the best I can for children, and so trying to find solutions to ensure that we continue to provide a stable, not flustered approach to education.
Mm. When lockdown happened, you know, and everything had to close up, how did you manage to keep in contact with your staff and monitor how the children were doing?
Right, so obviously, there's different stages, different number of lockdowns.
I mean,
so the first lockdown,
I have got a timeline, but it's really.
So if we look at the first lockdown, the first lockdown was more challenging than the second lockdown.
Was it?
Yeah, because the first lockdown, we had started developing ways of communicating, particularly with children and so on, but they weren't as evolved as the second lockdown.
No.
But they were by the end of the first lockdown.
Right.
So through technology, technology was, I personally feel, technology was a game changer during this time. I think if schools, and obviously I can only talk from my point of view in this school here, but technology allowed us to stay in contact by using the little things like Zoom, allowed us to maintain relationships, and I think relationships were one of the key things when during any of this period, relationships are the most important thing in schools. So to maintain relationships between staff and children, we did this through use of Zoom, use of Google Classroom, use of general telephones, use of things like WeDuck. So we used to have staff meetings via WeDuck. So we all went on there, could see everyone, and it was an easy access. You can use the video facility in it to allow that to happen. So we used to have staff meetings, for example. In the first lockdown, it was sometimes every week, most of the time it was through Zoom, but we actually all sat and did things. We also deliberately took a very proactive stance with our parents and our community. And what I mean by that is we decided that the biggest damage anything can do, whether it's a pandemic or even a war to some extent, is when people lose hope. And they often lose hope if you don't communicate very well, if communication is not as effective as it could be. So we developed, through planning, different opportunities to engage with both our staff, so through having virtual staff meetings, with pupils who are having live lessons, regular live lessons we had, right away from the start. And they included things like circle time, so children where you sat down virtually and talked about things you got at home, what happened, how things were. We did that regularly because we felt it was important. And again, about relationships. And with our families, we actually we did live virtual quizzes for about 12 or 13 weeks. We did live virtual quizzes on Facebook. We use Facebook for that, and sometimes I did most of them, but also near the end of that time, parents just did some as well. So it was really nice. The parents took over the virtual quizzes, and we had high percentages of our community took part in those quizzes on Facebook, which was really good. And one thing which I did do during all lockdowns, and I'm very, very proud that I did this, because this is what the school is about, was every morning we did worship. Mm-hmm. Even people who are non-Christian, we made sure it was inclusive, so people who are non-Christians, those who were Christians, could take part. We had over 600 people watching, so there's incredible amounts of people watching it during lockdown, and we did that every day because it's about, to me, society, communities, teams break down when communication breaks down. If you ensure that there's high communication, you ensure that you continue to develop relationships, it's really important, and that's what we stood by, and that really helped.
Wow. Did you find that the children, many children needed the computer equipment, or were they pretty well served?
So it's interesting, that is, because the lots of children now do have some kind of tablets, iPads, laptops, and something like that. Most families did. Some didn't. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we did a questionnaire to all our families to ask, what have you got? Very simple question, what have you got? What do you need?
Right.
And then what we did, this was during the first lockdown, we did this questionnaire. And as a result of that questionnaire, we got some clear, it was clear which people needed certain things. We then, very, very lucky we live in Arundel, because the community of Arundel were amazing. Not just the school community, I'm talking about the wider community. So we put a plea out on our Facebook page and via Twitter as well, for any technology people had, spare technology. Yeah. Now, this is before the government did all their things. Yeah. We did this early on. We were amazed by the response we got from the local community. And when I say local community, they're definitely a high percentage of people weren't linked to this school. They bought us laptops, tablets, all kinds of things in.
Yeah.
We even had someone who's had left the school and was now a parent themselves. Mm-hmm. They bought a laptop in. And people from all over bought laptops in and iPads and so on in. We had them serviced, obviously cleared, memory cleared, and we gave them out to families. So even after the first lockdown, midway through the first lockdown, all our children had technology.
Good Lord.
So we made sure that happened.
Yeah.
We made it happen. Then obviously in the second lockdown, the government then started supplying schools with bits. Yeah. But to be honest, it was too late by then.
Yeah.
It was too long. So many children had not had a learning experience, which wasn't right.
No. Was it possible to ever see children or families that were struggling with the homeschooling?
Yeah. Some families and some people did really struggle with homeschooling. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
And I think any school who says that wasn't the case, I'm not sure whether they're telling the truth.
No.
Because like all of us, we all go through difficult times sometimes. Every single one of us go through difficult times. And in our case, some of our families did find it difficult at times. But because we had open communication channels, we were able to support those families in different ways. So, for example, we had the teachers kept lists of who they kept contact with, and they were able then to identify parents who may be going off the radar or parents who needed support. And through that, we then gave them additional phone calls, made sure they were okay. At some times during the first lockdown, I sent a video message to every single child in this school. I made 210 video messages.
God.
To me, ages, but it was worth it because I'm passionate about working in this school. Mm. I'm passionate about working in this town, and it's not just a job. So actually, my job is education courses. Yeah. That's my central, but it's also keeping people safe and trying to keep them going. Give them hope, which is one of our three values.
Yes.
Hope, faith and love. Hope's one of our key values. So that's part of the process.
It's amazing.
Yeah, we were very lucky. We had some good people.
Mm. Having sort of caught up or trying to catch up, what's that been like? I mean, have you had access to, say, the National Tutorial Programme or... have you got groups of children with extra schooling to catch up?
So the interesting thing is what's happened in this school, like most schools in the country actually, and nationally, it's the NFER, which is a national
Federation
of Educational Research.
Yeah,
they did a study which suggested that children in Key Stage 1, the younger children in the school, had potential literacy difficulties, and children in Key Stage 2 had mathematical problems. Which was the same picture we had here, actually. Almost exactly the same. It was interesting, the research, natural research, kind of mirrored what we had discovered ourselves.
Really?
And actually, logically, that makes sense because if we talk about maths first in Key Stage 2, mathematics is a very structured way of learning. Mathematics is, and if you miss parts of that, you can't do it.
You can't move on.
Yeah, you can't move on. It's like learning to drive. You don't actually understand how to use a clutch properly.
No, you can't.
It's very difficult to drive a car unless it's an automatic. So that made sense. And in Key Stage 1, literacy, it's not surprising literacy was a difficulty because children didn't have much, they didn't socialise much. Speaking and listening obviously decreased because interaction is so important. People interacting with each other is so important. So we have found that to be the same here. So what we've done is we've used the National Tutoring Programme, which I'd say to this government, it's a really good scheme. Very, very helpful. It was good. They allowed schools to have, to a certain extent, some ownership how they use that.
Right.
So that was useful, and so we've used that for our in a Key Stage 2 for mathematics, focusing on mathematics, individual one-to-one tuition, online tuition.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's good. It's really good. It's good. The children are getting at least an hour, just over an hour a week.
Right, each child gets about.
Targeted children, not all children, but targeted children are getting an hour a week. In mathematics, which is very good, and in Key Stage 1, we put a greater emphasis on looking at how we, for example, teach reading in much more smaller groups to allow them a chance to do speaking and listening as well. Mm-hmm. We also have made sure that with literacy is a focus in Key Stage 1. And that's done through things like re-looking at what you deliver. What does your curriculum look like? So in our case, making sure that our curriculum and the books we use are engaging, and also, but more than just engaging, they also allow children time to reflect on things. So in this case, children, like adults, have been on a kind of journey which sometimes has been difficult, and sometimes a journey which has been challenging, and a journey which has been sometimes frustrating. And we've made sure that the books reflect that, the characters, the main characters in the books reflect that, so children can have someone they can see a character in a book who they can actually think, I've been through that as well. And can relate to, and I think that's really important for development. They can relate to them and help, that will help therefore their speaking and listening, and help their reading as well.
Now, do you think this program will be going on much longer, or is it something you would like to see continuing?
If I'm honest with you, I do think, I worry that people don't realise. Although I think we've done pretty well, but COVID has affected people in different ways. Mm. It's not just the children, it's also adults and parents.
That's right, yeah.
And I sometimes worry that we think it's with like things like the Ukraine crisis moment. Sometimes we forget, yeah, we might move on to that now to focus on that, but the COVID restrictions on has still had. Has changed the way we think, the way we interact now. Mm-hmm. It's different. Definitely. Just shaking someone's hand.
Yeah, definitely.
So we have to, I have to hope that these funding streams and funding in education remains high, if not higher, in order to repair some of the issues we've had.
Your children that will leave this year, for instance, and go on to senior school in September, how do you think that might affect them more? Are they ready as they should be, or do you feel that, you know, there are children who aren't going to do so well moving schools?
I'll be honest with you, I think the biggest impact were the ones last year. Children last year had a very difficult transition,
right.
Was very hard for
them. So the ones that went on to senior school last September.
Yeah, they had the most challenging time because...
That makes sense, yeah.
They, in some cases, they didn't actually get a chance to actually go to visit their school.
No.
So in some cases, they were virtual. It depends on the secondary school.
Yeah.
So in some cases, they may have been virtual.
Yeah.
And also the year before that as well, even more actually.
Yeah.
After the first year, it was very challenging for them, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I think the children this year, leaving this year, things are getting better. Mm-hmm. And I think they get a chance to actually go and visit their school. And we've had teachers from the secondary schools to come in again, which is vital.
Back to normal of that bit.
Yeah, yeah. So I do think that whether they're ready socially, emotionally, and so on is a different question.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how well you've done as a school, education... is about the best education, in my opinion, is when it's in person. You don't get the same level of engagement, you don't get the level of interest online as you do in person. We're human beings.
Well, we're all like
human beings. The best thing about being a human being is engagement. Everyone likes, you know, not everyone, majority of people tend to like talking to people. They like that.
We're social animals.
Yeah, we are, yeah. And I think... We can't forget that's affecting them. And going back to your question about the issues I found in school, that is why particularly I feel children in the younger age ranges So I have found it very, very difficult. So you take, for example, our year twos. Our year twos haven't really experienced a full year yet at school. And they've been in school 2 years, but they haven't really experienced a full year in school because of the various lockdowns we've had at different stages.
You don't think about that.
So those children there haven't experienced that. And now, this age now, they haven't experienced certain things. So little things like some of those children never had been in a an assembly situation. So what we had to do, and so when you get the whole school together, they hadn't been used to that. So you couldn't just chuck them all in there because
they didn't know how to be.
They didn't know how to behave, and some of them they would have got nervous because they're used to seeing. It's like if you're used to not being in big numbers. When you go into those big numbers, all of us, even us as adults, when we go into those big numbers, it can make us nervous. And that can affect you then for the rest of your life. So we had to be very sensitive and very strategic, ensuring that, having small groups going at a time and build it up slowly by knowing individual children.
So you wouldn't think about that, but of course it would do.
Yeah, and in some of it was difficult. And even things like, you know, sports day, traditional sports day. Most of our children haven't had a chance to see sports day. So it was all those kind of things we had to really carefully plan. And I like doing things in depth. I don't like just doing it. So we had to think very carefully about individual children, the timings, what was taking part in that assembly or worship, as we call it, to make sure that we let children in slowly and at a time. And now they're all back together now.
And that's great. It's funny, one doesn't think about that, because they were in small units.
They were.
2 years.
Well, even during one of the periods of lockdown, I remember it became, they changed the rules regularly, and the regulations. So at one stage, the biggest concern I had during, I think it was a second lockdown, but don't quote me if it was a second or first. Because one of the lockdowns, they changed the parameters of how many children you're allowed in a room. And it fortunately, they realised that, because at one stage, it was almost physically impossible to do what they wanted you to do because we didn't have enough rooms in the school. Because there were only, like, I think there was about 12 children in the classroom.
Yeah, well, you couldn't do that.
We haven't got enough rooms for that. So it was quite interesting. Those kind of times, you know, sometimes did give me sleepless nights. Because at that time, you believed that the virus spread in certain ways, so that's why you had to do that. And things like hand washing. Now, hand washing has always been an important thing in school life, but it became a far greater thing. And at one stage, we were probably hand washing 8 or 9 times a day, and people don't realise that. And to do that
with all those children,
so that's it's an operation in its own right, and you have to plan that operation, because otherwise, what you could do is you could spend like a couple of hours hand washing, and those kind of things. Children, like, you know, like I wasn't always the best behaved child in school, and I'd have probably been a bit naughty in that time. So it's all those things we had to be careful of. So I don't miss those bits.
It's actually quite funny when you look back.
It is.
I mean, I just got this vision of all these children trying to get into
it. It was, you look back now and you think, I can't believe it.
How did I do it?
Yeah, and why do I do it like that as well? Because it doesn't make any sense. It was crazy. So another thing which we did, which is important to be aware of, is they had this thing where certain furniture you weren't allowed in schools. Because they thought
the
virus.
Wipe down.
So they.
Oh my goodness.
So it's okay saying that. But then you have to understand the knock-on effect on that. So we actually had, at one stage, we had one whole room full of this furniture.
What, sort of fabric-y type.
So we had to put that on. And if you think about children in early years, you know, 4 and 5 year olds class, a lot of them have soft things like teddies and stuff, which you had to get rid of all of them. So that was quite hard, and we actually ran out of storage space for them, so we put some in outdoor sheds, which wasn't the best idea because it was winter, they got damp and we had to chuck them away. So we lost a lot of resources. Oh. As a school, we struggled. We have struggled. Mm. We have lost some resources because of that, which is difficult. But it's so that side was difficult. But then there's the other bit to that, which you have to think about, is you've got children who haven't been in the classroom for a period of time because of lockdown. Then they came back into the classroom, but you were told you couldn't have anything soft or kind of child-friendly in the classroom. So getting some four-year-olds to come into a room which is very unchild-like was difficult, especially if they've been away for a long time because it was so sterile, really. And it was very difficult to bring children into that, and that took a lot of work in terms of looking at the psychology of the children, considering what we could do to make that more of a soft approach to it, and in the guidelines, but making it sure it's soft and fair. And that took a lot of thinking, actually, to do that.
So you had to wash a lot of the stuff regularly?
Yeah, regularly wash.
Normally use?
Yeah. So costs of resources and materials went up tremendously. And also there was one stage when you had to sit children in rows. All in rows. It was like going back to an old Victorian school.
Yeah.
You know, and although I know lots of people say, oh, let's go back to old Victorian ways. Maybe in one day you probably could, but children as learners are very different learners to what we were like. You know, most of us were mainly predominantly formal and auditory learners. We learned by listening. These children tend to be more kinesthetic in their approach, argue, and more, you know, visual particularly. And those kind of things became more challenging. So we had to think about, on our feet how to do that. And at one stage, the government were, the regulations coming out were how schools kept up with the pace of it, I do not know, in terms of...
I mean, schools with like 2,000 kids.
But the regulations, the government sent out new guidelines, guidelines literally weekly at one stage. And... so you had to keep making changes regularly.
Were they guidelines or were they rules?
Well, they were guidelines, but if you didn't follow them at that stage, because our knowledge of COVID was still relatively naive, you did kind of follow them. And that made things difficult. It did make things difficult. But saying that, some of those guidelines, like... a staggered start in the morning, which they encourage you to do because you get less children, less groups of children and congregating together. That has actually, in a strange way, has done something which I never thought it would do. And if we hadn't had COVID, I probably wouldn't have thought of. And that what that's done is allowed us to think about how children come into school.
It's interesting because I was going to ask you, is there anything really positive that you gained out of that by default, really?
Yeah.
That you might want to continue with?
Yes.
Or are continuing?
Yeah, some things we are continuing. So, a couple of things which I'd say which has allowed us, which are definitely positives about what's happened. If strange word to put into like pandemic, but
I know
they, were. So, one of them was staggered starts. Now, government asked schools to consider. Having staggered starts, the children and parents wouldn't congregate outside your school, therefore have more chance of spreading the virus. We did that. It was very challenging because it was a very complicated process. It was a bit like the shopping where you book a shopping slot.
Yeah.
We did the same with people, so you book slots and they came in. We used both gates at the school, which because having two gates at a primary school is very helpful in this situation because you can get a flow of people in and out. And we started thinking when this was happening, and parents were kept outside the main gates. Now what we found, and although parents don't always like this, what we have found is that children, and we're in it for children, have actually emotionally are better by doing this. Because often what we found, when a child came in with their parents, they would be upset and it would cause them a problem. Because there's like a line in the sand, we had less issues. And the other thing which we had, which also helped, is by having this staggered start, some children don't like lots of people. they get worried about us.
Yeah.
So having a staggered start, you have a very rather than a big flow of all people all together, like a big rush, like a Christmas, like a Christmas sales.
Yeah.
Rather than have that, or
smaller groups.
Yeah, smaller groups come in, and it was just a gentle flow. So then the atmosphere coming in is calmer. Much more ready to learn.
Are you carrying on with that?
Yeah, we've carried on with that.
That's interesting.
We've carried that on because we feel we have found it's so much more beneficial to the children.
Really?
So it's been, they come in, you have to change your curriculum content, your strategy there, because you're getting children coming in at different times.
So a child would have a program when they know when they have to come into school?
Yeah. Yeah, every group of children have a set time for the come in. So they all have, we produce this sort of parent pack, which gives you, and in here they all have a set time to come in, a drop off and a pick up time.
Oh, look at that.
And a different gates and linked to their.
So did that extend the working day?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we before the government had said we should do that, recommending that, we had already done that.
Had you?
We'd already decided we were going to do that. We'd done it for a number of reasons. One, because we needed to do it for the second start, and second start and second end of the day. But also we were aware of, you know, it was clear, although we did a really good job during lockdown, it was clear children had missed some of their learning. So we had to consider what we did in terms of curriculum. We had to decide, make sure our children got the benefit of being together, so socially as well, but also in terms of their learning experience as well.
So if, God forbid, the situation arose again, you would feel much more able to deal with it, you think?
Yes, yeah. I think to be honest with you, we were the second lockdown, we were ready then. I wasn't so worried the second lockdown.
Okay.
So this last recent times I've not been, it's not been such a massive worry. I think the key again, and one of the positives of coming out of this, was technology.
Yeah.
The concept of how you use technology. In our school, we also invested after the first lockdown, every child we bought a Chromebook, which is a laptop basically. So every child got a Chromebook, which allows them then to do work on that. We decided to use Google because Google can be used on anything. And it's a universal thing which is used on many things, from your mobile phones, so anyone can access at any time and they can do work which parents can see.
So you're continuing to use that?
Yeah, so that's been good, because what that's done, one of the key things to education, I think, is particularly now more than ever, is the importance of parents. Parents play a vital role. And some parents, and those parents, and these parents are the ones I think understand that education is not just a 9 to 3.
No.
Learning is constant, should be all the time. And those parents who want to be part of that process, by having Google Classroom, it allows them to look at what their child's doing. They can have a more in-depth understanding of what's going on. What is my child doing this week? But you can have Google Classroom, they can see that. And I think that's really important. We also have a school app. We have our own app, designated app for our families, which allows, again, communication to be very open, very transparent. Parents, children can engage in what we're doing, and I think that's really important as well.
And you find most parents contribute to that?
Yes, we're very good, very lucky. I think if they understand, like everyone, all of us in life, we understand why we're doing something, what are the benefits to both the school but also their child and to them. If they understand that and they're willing to listen to what that is, and they'll get behind you. And we've been very lucky in this school, community has got behind us to actually understand that the way forward is constant communication, very transparent. This is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and this is what will happen as a result of it. So I think that's really important.
Well, I think that's really brilliant. I mean, you've more than covered any ideas and more than I might have had.
Pardon? I've got small bits to cover.
No, not from my side.
Can I cover some more?
Please do.
So some of the other things which are important for people to be aware of is, other than the cleansiness and technology to enhance learning, the other things you had to think about is food. Because you had to look at food in a different way, in the sense of you had different groups of people who needed different things. So you had food here, you provided food here for children who came here, that